Chapter 13. An hour later, Lynn was sitting at the wardroom table with the crew, picking at her breakfast like the rest of them. Except for Mac, of course, who was shoveling the surprisingly tasty eggs down, like there was no tomorrow.
Lynn?
Maria asked as she entered the room. It was the first anyone had seen of her since she stormed out of the med lab.
Maria, are you okay?
Lynn asked, with as much compassion as she could muster.
No, of course not, she snapped. My best friend just died on my exam table.
Maria took a mental step back, taking in a deep breath to calm down.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it, Lynn assured her, before Maria spoke again.
Listen, we need to get Laura's body out to the utility hut where we did the alien autopsy as soon as possible.
Why?
I need to perform a post-mortem.
Jesus, Maria.
She's not even cold yet,
Tony added with disdain. Tony wasn't the only one who was shocked. She could see similar reactions in all their eyes.
I'm sorry if the idea offends you, Maria said defensively. Can't this wait?
Lynn asked.
That's just it, Lynn, Maria protested. It can't. Come on, Maria,
Tony insisted.
Yes, step back for a moment. Give yourself some time,
Sarah added.
I don't have that luxury,
Maria retorted, annoyed by their objections.
We don't have that luxury. Laura has always been easily overcome by illness. She's been that way her whole life. But whatever killed her did so at an alarming rate, and for all we know, it could be contagious.
We should seal off the lab, Lynn realized, embarrassed that she hadn't already thought to do so.
I've already done it, on my way in. I need Mac and Tony to suit up with me so we can get her body out of there and move her to a utility hut so I can isolate her.
What are we going to do for a med lab?
Adia asked.
The med lab has a built-in decontamination system, Tony explained. In fact, its entire ventilation system is separate from the rest of the ship.
That's right, Maria nodded.
We can get it good and sterile without too much difficulty. After that, we can use it again.
Okay, let's make that our first priority then,
Lynn agreed.
Mac and Tony can handle the decontamination duty, Maria insisted. I need to get on the post-mortem.
Are you guys comfortable with that?
Lynn asked, looking at Tony.
Sure,
Tony agreed.
We know the drill.
He looked at Mac, who began shoveling down his eggs even faster.
Very well, Lynn decided. That'll be first on the agenda.
Sarah and Adia started clearing the table as Mac and Tony departed, with Maria following behind them.
Maria?
Lynn called after her.
Can I speak to you a moment?
Sure.
Lynn took her aside, away from the others, so as not to alarm them unnecessarily.
We were all exposed, weren't we?
I don't know. If it's transmitted by bodily fluids, then no, but if it's airborne...
How much will decontaminating the med lab help?
It's a start.
Maybe we should decontaminate the entire ship.
Let me do an autopsy first,
Maria insisted.
If it is airborne, it's already too late, and decontamination would likely be a waste of time and resources. Remember, we don't have an unlimited supply of the decon chemicals.
Right.
Lynn sighed as Maria turned to depart.
Maria?
She called after her. Maria turned back to face Lynn.
Thank you. I know this is hard for you.
It's always hard, Lynn,
Maria replied solemnly.
Always.
Lynn stood there for a moment, thinking. Everything was happening so fast. They were down to only 6 people now, only 60% of their design staffing level. There was no way they were going to get anything done today, maybe not even for a few days. At least, not until they could put Laura's death behind them and be reasonably certain that they were not in any immediate danger.
Day 55. Please forgive my poor penmanship. The cold makes it difficult to write. It has been 3 days since our last kill, and we have nearly run out of meat. Another day, and we will be without food. Tomorrow, we will pause our journey in order to hunt again. Although the higher elevations seem to offer fewer opportunities, we can usually find the Setian equivalent of a mountain goat. They are ugly creatures, able to stand on seemingly vertical surfaces.
Covered with thick fur and countless layers of fat, their meat is bitter and tough and requires what seems like hours of chewing. I can't imagine how long their meat takes to digest. Every time we stop to hunt, our journey lengthens by at least 2 days. It takes time to process the usable parts of our kill so that we can carry the newly acquired resources on our journey. And each time we hunt, we expend ammunition, another commodity in limited supply. At least I will have more time to practice my flute. I cannot begin to describe to you the joy it brings me. The ability to create music on a whim, to make my tiny instrument sing. The range of emotion that one little stick of wood can invoke is truly astounding.
By late evening, Maria was finished with her autopsy. She had worked nearly 12 hours straight, taking only a few short breaks.
"Learn anything?" Lynn asked, as Maria collapsed into one of the wardroom chairs.
"Plenty."
Maria poured herself a glass of water and took a long drink. She was covered with perspiration, and her face was drained of energy, and, by the looks of it, hope.
"Any idea why she died?"
"None."
Maria looked at Lynn's confused expression.
"Well, not none, just not much. I do know that she died from multiple organ failure. I just don't know why all her organs decided to fail. It's like each one just decided to give up. First her kidneys, then her liver, then her pancreas. Eventually, there were so many toxins that her own blood became poisonous to her heart and lungs, and they shut down too."
Maria took another drink and wiped her forehead.
"That's why we couldn't resuscitate her. Christ, her pH was down to 6.2, even after multiple rounds of bicarb. I'm surprised she didn't die sooner."
Maria leaned forward, placing her face in her hands and running them up over her head. Her neck and back were aching, and she was so tired that she couldn't see straight.
"Maybe you should get some rest." "You don't understand. If I don't figure this out, it could kill us all."
"Get some sleep," Lynn said sternly. "That's an order. You probably couldn't see the answer if it jumped out in front of you right now."
Maria sighed.
"You're right."
"For once," Lynn replied, offering a sympathetic smile. Mac stepped down from the boarding ramp onto the ground at the front of the LRV, put on his sunglasses, and looked around. The air was fresh, the ground still moist from last night's light rain.
"Ready to get to work?"
Tony asked, as he came down the ramp to join his friend.
"You bet. After yesterday, it'll be good to get back to my regular work."
Mac reached down and pressed on his right side, wincing in pain for a brief moment.
"Are you all right?"
Tony asked, noticing his discomfort.
"Yeah, just a little indigestion. Probably from Sarah's attempt at making dinner last night."
"Yeah, I know what you mean,"
Tony agreed, as they started toward the utility hut.
"What the hell was that stuff she made, anyway?"
"I have no idea," Mac laughed. "I was afraid to ask, to be honest."
Another wave of discomfort swept through his side, causing him to grimace again.
"Maybe you'd better have Maria check you out?"
"Nah," he protested. "I'll be fine. Let's get to work."
Day 56.
I don't know how Jack maintains his optimism from day to day. He is so certain that we will make it back to rejoin the others. Myself, I find it harder and harder to have such unwavering faith. Time and again, I find myself wanting to suggest that we return to lower elevations where food is more abundant and wait out the worst of the winter before moving on. But I fear that if I were to admit my doubts to Jack, I might just crush what little faith he has left. I have seen doubt in his eyes each time we crest what he hopes will be our last summit, and the disappointment in those same eyes when we spot another ridge beyond. Yet, despite the hardships we continually face, I am still in awe of the natural beauty that surrounds us. This snow, this pure white blanket that covers everything and slows our progress by considerable measure, it's almost magical.
Deposited here in the frigid altitudes, it lies in wait. In the months to come, as the weather turns warmer, it will slowly begin to melt, trickling down the slopes, making its way down toward the valleys. At first, it will form tiny streams. These streams will combine to form creeks and then rivers. These rivers, crashing down from the mountains, will actually carve through the mountains over millions of years. But as they slowly destroy these mighty layers of rock, they also provide the essential elements to the myriad of life forms that they touch on the way down. Plants that drink these waters from the soils, animals that eat the plants and drink from these creeks and rivers, fish that live in these bodies of water. Even the birds above find sustenance from these never-ending waters. And then they find their way down into and through the valleys and the flatlands below, where they again provide the building blocks of life to all living things. Finally, they find their way to the oceans, where they host an entirely different ecosystem, as they lie in wait to be picked back up through evaporation and carried inland in the form of clouds, where they will be deposited once more onto the mountaintops as this beautiful, innocent white powder. As of yet, I have found no evidence that whatever killed Laura is contagious, Maria reported at an impromptu meeting in the LRV's wardroom after the evening meal. My best guess is that it had something to do with the injuries she received when she was attacked by that creature. Some kind of infection that I haven't been able to detect. I see, Lynn said, looking thoughtful for a moment. And no one else was injured during the attack?
I had a few scratches, Mac admitted, but they were from the shelves, not the creature.
But he did have the creature's blood all over him, Sarah added, with concern. I had to hose him down.
Maria took notice, leaning forward.
Have you had any symptoms?
Like what?
Mac wondered.
Nausea, vomiting, fatigue?
Didn't you have some indigestion this morning? Tony asked.
A little, but that was from Sarah's cooking, he added, with a grin. But nothing like what you're describing, Doc.
Well, I'd better check you out, just to be sure, Maria decided. In fact, it wouldn't be a bad idea to give everyone another physical, she advised Lynn, just to be on the safe side.
Good idea, Lynn agreed. You can start with Mac tonight. In the meantime, everyone get some sleep, Lynn ordered. It's been an exhausting few days.
Why didn't you say anything?
Sarah scolded Mac as the others rose from the table.
It was nothing, he assured her. It was just that mystery meat you made last night.
Don't be such a tough guy, Mac.
Mac rolled his eyes in response.
I'm not kidding, she asserted,
noticing his expression.
Yes, ma'am,
he finally conceded.
So, what's the verdict, Doc?
Mac asked, in his usual jovial manner.
Am I done for?
Not yet,
Maria responded, vaguely. Mac noticed something different in her tone.
What's the problem?
Well, nothing, really. It's just that your blood chemistry seems a little skewed.
Huh?
RBCs are high, white count's a little low, pH is off a bit.
You want to speak English?
Oh, sorry. I'm sure it's nothing. Probably due to the indigestion you were talking about.
But?
But I'd like to keep an eye on you tonight, just to be sure.
She was trying very hard not to let her concern show too much. The fact was, his labs were leaning in a suspiciously similar direction as Laura's labs had been when she had first come to her. They were nowhere near as messed up, but it could be just the beginning.
Why, you want me to sleep here?
Yes, I think it would be best if you did.
Hey, no offense, Doc, but don't you think you're overreacting?
I can make it an order, if you'd like.
Where am I going to sleep?
Right where you're sitting. Technically, that is a bed, you know.
Yeah, but this is where...
Mac suddenly cut himself off, not wanting to point out the morbidly obvious. Unfortunately, he couldn't think of a way out of the hole he'd dug for himself, so he just stopped talking instead.
Look, go get your sleeping gear. You can even bring your mattress if you like, but you are sleeping here tonight. connected to all my biomonitors.
Oh, come on, Maria, Mac begged. Just let me sleep in my own berth tonight. I promise I'll come to you if I feel the tiniest bit off, I swear.
Sorry, Mac. I can't monitor you well enough from your own berth, and I need to monitor your trends, not just periodic values. It's for your own good, as well as everyone else's. Honest.
Mac sighed.
I guess.
Now, go and get your stuff and report back to me in 15 minutes. I promise, if your condition doesn't change overnight, you can sleep in your own bed tomorrow night.
She watched as he jumped down off the exam table, pulling his shirt on over his head as he exited the med lab, still complaining under his breath. Despite her concerns for his health, she maintained her pleasant expression until he was gone. Maria stepped across the lab and sat down at her computer terminal to update her medical log. She was deeply concerned, and she felt guilty for being more concerned about finding the reason for Laura's death than she was for Mac's well-being. After all, if Mac was developing the same illness that had taken Laura's life, then it might provide a valuable clue, one that might lead her toward a cure. And she had more than just the welfare of the crew to worry about. She was responsible for the welfare of everyone hurtling toward them on the Daedalus as well.
Day 57. So much I have seen, so much I have done. I can't even begin to describe it all as I had originally intended. I am not the same man I was when we arrived. This experience has somehow changed me. At times, I am quite proud of the changes within me, but other times, I worry that I'm no longer the man you married. I do things now that would have been unthinkable to me before. I kill live animals and eat their flesh. I casually hike past wondrous examples of geology without noticing. I witness weather patterns that, until arriving on this world, were no more than subjects of study in science classes, yet I spend no effort analyzing them. So centered on survival I have become, I seem to notice only those things that have an impact on our day-to-day existence. Perhaps this is why our ancestors paid little attention to their impact on their own world's ecology. So important was their own survival that they either could not see or chose not to see the damage they were doing to the beauty that surrounded them at every turn. Before, I could not understand this. But now, even though it still seems short-sighted, the reasons are at least fathomable. It has finally warmed up to a bearable temperature in my little tent. It's amazing to me how such flimsy material can hold in any heat at all. Of course, what I refer to as warmth is merely a few degrees above freezing, as I can still see my own breath. So I will endeavor to keep warm, using thoughts of you and the children, as I drift away for the night. You can't imagine how much I miss you all.
2 days later, Mac was feeling measurably worse, although not as bad as Maria had feared. Another set of labs at dawn revealed subtle changes in his body chemistry, the most troubling being the drop in his body pH. If it dropped much further, Mac would become susceptible to cardiac arrhythmia, and possibly death. Unfortunately, Sarah reported similar symptoms of nausea and vomiting, the same as Laura's, and a bit worse than Mac's. Assuming the common element was that they were all exposed to the alien creature during the attack, Maria insisted on performing a physical on Tony as well. The results of Tony's exam were just as Maria expected, with slight yet similar changes in body chemistry. Even though Tony did not feel any of the symptoms the others complained about yet, Maria ordered him to bed as well, hoping to slow the symptoms. With Maria busy caring for her patients, only Lynn and Adia were left to perform the daily chores. Lynn immediately put all of the mission duties on hold, finding that the job of keeping their little camp functioning now consumed all of their time. By dinner, they were so tired that none of them felt much like cooking. Instead, they chose to eat energy bars and dried fruit, just like they had when they first arrived on Tau Ceti 5. Maria entered the cockpit, taking a seat at Frank's engineering station at the rear of the compartment. She looked over at Lynn,
who was nibbling unenthusiastically on a piece of dried fruit.
"How are they doing?" Lynn asked.
"Tony still doesn't show any symptoms other than slight body chemistry changes," Maria began. "Sarah was vomiting quite a bit, but I got that under control with antiemetics."
"Is she getting worse?" Lynn wondered,
almost afraid to ask.
"Her chems haven't changed much since this morning, but that's because I've been treating the symptoms, trying to keep her pH from falling, and keeping her hydrated."
Maria leaned back in her chair and ran her fingers through her hair, pulling her bangs back out of her face.
"Unfortunately, Mac's not doing so hot. His pH keeps dropping, despite all my efforts to stabilize it. He's feverish and occasionally delusional, and it looks as though his kidney function is declining."
"Is he going to die?"
"Well, he's not crashing as fast as Laura did, probably because he's normally strong and healthy."
Maria sighed, a sorrowful look on her face as she remembered her deceased friend.
"But all that does is buy us a little time."
"Are you any closer to discovering the cause?" Lynn asked.
"Nope. I've been too busy trying to stabilize Mac. Every time I sit down to try to work on the problem, one of them needs my help."
"Could you use some help?" Lynn asked.
"I can probably handle the maintenance tasks myself, at least for a few days anyway. I can have Adia work with you."
"That would be helpful, yes," Maria accepted. "She knows her way around a lab. At the very least, she can run labs for me."
"I'll speak to her about it," Lynn promised.
"Lynn?" Maria paused nervously, not wanting to say what was on her mind.
"What is it?" Lynn asked, seeing the trepidation on Maria's face.
"I don't think I'm going to find a way to stop this."
"Come on, Maria. Don't you think you're selling yourself short?" Lynn wondered. "It's only been a few days."
"Yes, and I'm still no closer to understanding why this is happening, let alone how to stop it."
"Don't give up so easily," Lynn encouraged her.
"Oh, you don't understand," Maria insisted. "Given the right circumstances, I probably could find a cure for whatever the hell this is, but that could take months, possibly years. And in a real laboratory, with a research staff and the proper equipment. It's only been 2.5 days, and this thing has already claimed one life, and is well on its way to claiming a second."
Lynn was surprised. "Is he that bad off?"
48 hours, maybe. I can't see him lasting much longer than that."
Lynn looked away for a moment, her mind spinning, panicking.
"Lynn?" Maria asked.
Lynn snapped back to reality.
"Are we all going to die?"
"I just don't know. If they were infected by direct contact with the creature's blood, then there's a good chance that the rest of us are safe. But I don't think I'm going to be able to stop this before—"
Maria paused, not wanting to say the words. She didn't have to say it. Lynn understood.
Jack carefully made his way through the knee-deep snow, meticulously choosing his route in an effort to remain hidden. He and Will had been tracking this particular goat-like creature for over 2 hours now. But each time they were about to get within range of the stout creature, it would move away. Jack crouched low behind a large fallen tree, pulling out his viewscope to get a range on the elusive creature that vaguely resembled a mountain goat.
"Just within range," he whispered.
"Are you nuts?" Will objected quietly. "He's got to be over 200 meters away."
"I can hit him," Jack whispered back confidently.
"I'll be the first to admit that you're a good shot, Jack, but you're not that good.
You want to spend the whole day out here following that damn thing around?"
"If you miss, he'll run off and we'll never catch him," Will pointed out.
Jack unslung his rifle and carefully laid it across the fallen log. He focused the targeting scope, setting it to maximum zoom.
"What's the crosswind at? 3 kph, maybe?"
"More like 4,
Will corrected him. Jack entered the crosswind data into the rifle's targeting system. The crosshairs moved to the right a few centimeters. Jack adjusted his aim, realigning the crosshairs onto the creature's head. He watched for a moment, making sure that it wasn't about to move. He didn't want to waste a round if he didn't have to. The goat's head suddenly snapped up, its body frozen in place, ears perking up and shifting forward,
as if listening for something far away. Jack froze. He spotted us. Will stared at the animal through Jack's viewscope.
No, he's not looking at us, he whispered back. Something else has gotten his attention.
The animal suddenly made a break for the distant rocks, running as if he was trying to escape something.
Shit!
Jack cursed under his breath.
How the hell did he know we were here? There's no way he could have seen us, and we're not upwind of him. I was trying to tell you, Jack. We didn't spook him. Something else did.
Will scanned the area, panning to the right in the direction the goat-like creature had been looking and the opposite direction from where he had run.
I don't see anything.
Will's head suddenly snapped back in fright.
Look!
He exclaimed in a forced whisper. He frantically reset the range on the viewscope.
That's gotta be what it was running from.
Jack trained his scope on the creature Will had spotted. It was bipedal, with long arms and legs, and was covered with thin blue fur from head to toe. Although it could stand like a human, when it moved, it used all four of its extremities in the same fashion as an ape would back on Earth.
You think that thing is after the goat? Jack wondered.
Maybe.
That would mean it's a meat-eater, right?
That would be my guess, Will agreed.
Well, let's not hang around to find out, Jack decided, looking around. Which way was he headed?
Same as the goat, toward the rocks.
Then let's head due west. Maybe that thing will chase the goat back toward us.
Maybe we head south, back to camp. I don't want to go anywhere near that thing.
Need I remind you that we're nearly out of food?
Yeah, but that big, hairy...
Will, Jack interrupted. We've got the guns, remember?
Jack rose to his feet. Besides, that big ugly son of a bitch might be edible as well, he added, as he headed out.
Doubtful,
Will muttered, as he rose to follow Jack. Jack was moving as fast as he could in the knee-deep snow. Will did his best to keep up, panting heavily with every step.
Do you have any idea where we're going?
Will asked.
We were up there yesterday, Jack panted as he chugged along. There's a long gully just beyond those rocks up ahead. The valley the goat's running into makes a left turn at the end. With any luck, it'll jump into the gully to escape and head right to us. If we get there first, we'll have a clean shot.
Will was falling further and further behind.
Wait up, Jack,
he called out. But Jack wasn't slowing down.
Get your rifle ready,
Jack ordered, as he rounded the large outcropping of rocks on his right.
You take the goat, and I'll take...
Jack turned the corner and stopped dead in his tracks. There, not 4 meters directly in front of him, was a massive, bear-like creature, similar to the one that had attacked Will weeks ago. Jack raised his rifle as the beast charged toward him, but it was too late. The creature leapt at him, knocking him backward into the snow. Without realizing it, Jack had his rifle in between the animal's massive jaws, wrestling with all his might to hold its head away as it snarled angrily. The creature ripped the rifle from Jack's hands, sitting up and tossing the weapon aside, letting out a mighty roar as it raised its left paw to strike Jack. Jack heard a shot from behind him, followed instantly by a wet thud as blood spattered from a superficial wound in the beast's chest. Blood sprayed across Jack's face as 2 more shots sounded, followed by 2 more thuds. The bear-like creature fell backwards, rolling off Jack, who scrambled away from it, still on his back.
Are you all right?
Will asked, rushing to Jack's side to help him up.
Jesus, did you see that thing?
Jack exclaimed. Will looked back at the beast as he helped Jack to his feet. The massive animal looked dazed, unsure of what had happened to him.
Let's get out of here.
Where's my rifle?
Jack asked, as he got to his feet. The bear-like animal sat back up, checking his wounds. It was bleeding, but was not seriously injured. And its anger was building as it surveyed Jack and Will.
Forget the rifle,
Will insisted, noticing the creature had shaken off the shock of the initial attack. Jack also saw the beast as it rose to its feet to resume the attack.
Shit!
Was all Jack could say as he turned to run. Will was the first to make it back around the rocks. Jack was only a few steps behind him when the creature paused, just long enough to let out a bloodthirsty roar.
"Left! Left! Left!" Jack cried out to Will. "Head for the rocks! We'll never outrun him over open ground!"
Jack was nearly neck and neck with Will as he gave the command, reaching out and pulling him to his left as he began to pass him. Jack could hear the beast panting and growling as it rounded the rocks in pursuit. The creature spotted its fleeing prey and paused to roar before continuing the chase. While its roar frightened them, Jack realized the creature only did so when it wasn't running. That meant there would be a little more ground between them. But the noise subsided, replaced with the sounds of the beast's heavy paws plowing through the snow and its growling pant. Jack's head flicked to the side to catch a quick glance at their pursuer. The creature was only 10 meters behind them at the most, and was gaining quickly. Just ahead was another outcropping of rock, rising about 5 meters above the snow, and was about 20 meters long. If Jack remembered correctly, there was an area of large rocks just beyond it.
"Give me your rifle!" Jack ordered, as he came to a sudden stop.
Will handed the rifle to Jack when he caught up to him, moving around behind him. Jack quickly swung around, lowering the rifle to his waist, firing 3 quick shots at the onrushing creature. The first round missed, spraying up snow behind and to the right of the beast. The second round grazed his shoulder, causing the creature to stumble slightly to the left, stepping into the path of the third round, which entered its eye. The beast rolled back onto its side, crying out in agony. Jack felt a surge of victory, but it quickly became evident that the creature was only down, not out.
"Keep going!" Jack ordered, pushing Will forward. "Head for the rocks! To the right!"
Jack and Will ran around the short ridge line, toward the rock field. They could hear the beast crying out from behind them, in a combination of pain and blind rage. There was no doubt in Jack's mind. The creature would not stop until it killed them both. Another minute of running, and they reached the rocks. Leading the way, Jack dodged between them, working his way to higher ground.
"Where are we going?"
Will panted, as he followed Jack higher and higher up the mountainside.
"We've got to get to higher ground," he explained, between breaths. "Get a better shot."
They continued up the slope, Jack slinging the rifle over his shoulder to use both hands to climb. In the distance, they could hear the panting grunts of the injured beast following their scent. They had a minute at best to find a good place to take another shot. Jack made his way between 2 large rocks, stopping halfway through the crevice. There was another crevice to his right, which Jack headed into. A few more steps, and the crack turned upward. Climbing as quickly as they could, they made their way to a perch halfway up the pile of rocks. Behind them, they had a clear view of the creature's approach to their position. Above them was a larger rock, and to the other side was another way back down and around the outcropping on which they stood. Jack quickly unslung his rifle and took up a firing position.
"We'll make our stand here. It's got to come up the way we did, and it's too big to make it up the crevice as fast as us. If it does, we can escape down the other side."
Jack looked at his ammo display.
"Only 4 rounds left. We gotta make 'em count."
He set the range on his scope, sighting the point where the creature would undoubtedly round the rocks after them.
"Pull your sidearm."
"What good will a handgun do?"
Will argued.
"The rifle barely knocked him down."
"Just unload it on him as fast as you can when he comes around the bend. If you can piss him off again, maybe he'll stand up and roar at us again."
"Don't you think we've pissed him off enough?"
Will replied.
"When he roars, I'll put one into his mouth and blow out the back of his fucking head. That should slow him down a bit."
Will settled down into a firing position next to Jack.
"I'm not very good with this thing, you know."
"He's only going to be 12 meters away. Just unload the whole clip on him,"
Jack whispered as he adjusted his aim.
"One of them is bound to hit."
Jack waited, peering half through his targeting scope and half over the top of the scope.
down into the gully below them. He could hear the sound of the beast approaching, its lumbering paws, its ominous grunting pant, intermixed with occasional cries of pain from numerous wounds. Will fought back his fear as they waited. He counted in his head the number of times he had actually fired a weapon at something living. Then he counted the number of times he had actually hit what he had been aiming at. The ratio was not encouraging. Neither was the number of times his hits had actually killed something. His fear swelled as the sounds of the approaching creature grew closer. But there was something else. Another sound. Like small pebbles falling down the sides of a large rock. The beast slowly rounded the corner. It hadn't spotted them yet. Its face was bloodied from its wounded eye, its gait somewhat staggered as it tried to determine the range from various objects, using only its good eye. Its head rose slightly, sniffing the air with a large black nose. The enemy was nearby. Another angry half-growl came from the beast's mouth as it proceeded into the gully.
"That's it," Jack whispered. "Keep coming."
Something small bounced off of Will's back and then off of his leg. Will instinctively turned his head to see where it had come from. The beast caught the motion with its good eye, turning toward their position.
"It spotted us," Jack warned.
Will's eyes widened in horror as he looked up behind them. Crouched into an attack stance atop the rock behind them was the tall, muscular humanoid that had originally spooked their prey. Its mouth was open, exposing sharp teeth and a pair of fangs. Its eyes were squinted and focused, full of rage and intent, with a rugged frame coiled tightly to launch an attack.
"Jack!"
Will warned as he grabbed at Jack's shoulder. Jack's head spun around, his shoulders following, as the ape-like creature above them let out a blood-curdling howl. Jack and Will both spun around to take aim at the second creature, but it was too late. The humanoid leapt at them from its perch. Jack's heart stopped at the sight of the creature, leaping into the air. Will had already headed to his right, down their pre-planned escape route, not waiting to become the meal of yet another alien aggressor. Jack raised his weapon to fire as the humanoid creature sailed over his head, landing a good 5 meters past him in the middle of the gully, right in the path of the rampaging beast. A split second later, the two creatures were locked in combat, rolling around wildly in the gully below. Jack watched in amazement as the battle raged. Fur flew from the four-legged beast as the humanoid slashed at its opponent's flanks with long, muscular arms. The beast latched its massive jaws onto the humanoid's right leg as it fell over, eliciting a cry of pain. The humanoid reached its right arm down around the beast's neck, driving its claws into the beast's throat. A gurgling sound nearly drowned the beast's cry as blood shot from its neck. Again, the beast locked its jaws onto the humanoid's leg, struggling to defend itself. That was enough for Jack. It was time to leave. He had no idea who was going to win this battle, but he was sure he didn't want to hang around to find out. He looked to his right, just in time to see Will disappearing around the corner of the rocks at the bottom of their escape route. Will had the right idea, and Jack followed without hesitation. Will rounded the rocks at the bottom of the crevice and turned to the right between more rocks. Jack was no more than 3 meters behind him when he, too, reached the bottom and turned to follow. Will broke out into the open, south of the rocks. He started to run, kicking up snow as he plowed through the thigh-deep snowdrifts. All he could think of was getting back to camp. To Will, the camp meant safety. Jack wanted to get back to camp as well, but for different reasons. Ammunition. Whoever won that battle back in the gully might come looking for them next. Jack emerged from the rock field. He could see Will making his way across the snowdrifts, moving faster than he had ever seen him move before.
"Will!"
he called as he headed out across the snow after him. Will wasn't about to slow down, not until he got some serious distance between him and those two alien creatures, battling it out in the gully behind them. Jack struggled to catch up, following Will's path through the snow to reduce his effort. He kept his eyes on Will as he followed him, the sounds of the ferocious battle fading. As he ran, Jack noticed a pain in his left leg. He looked down as he ran. Blood was dripping from a long gash in his thigh. He slowed for a moment, taking the opportunity to see if either of the two creatures was following them, but there was no sign of any pursuit. Suddenly, Jack heard Will scream. He spun his head forward, but Will was nowhere to be seen. All Jack could see was the snowdrift where Will had been a moment ago. There was a terrible sound, like mountains of snow falling onto the ground all at once.
Will!
Jack continued running forward, stopping short as the snow fell away in front of him.
Will!
Jack fell to his knees, his hands shuffling through the snow along the hard surface below, as he searched for an edge. He found it. He looked to both sides. The snow had given way in front of him for at least 20 meters on either side of their path. He peered over the edge. Below him was another crevice, at least 15 meters deep. It was narrow at the top, maybe a meter or two across, opening up at the bottom to probably 3 times that.
Will!
His voice echoed in the space below. Jack scanned the bottom of the hole. It was illuminated by an eerie, bluish-white light. The source was white directly below him, and blue to either side. Jack searched frantically for any sign of Will, but all he could see was snow. Lots of snow.
He's got to be down there somewhere, Jack thought.
Jack continued to call out, but there was no response. No sound, and no movement. Further observation showed that the gully below was long. Jack couldn't see an end in either direction.
It must have been covered up by the snow, he thought.
Will, if you can hear me, I'm going to run back to camp and get a rope. I'm going to get you out of there. I promise.
It was the most difficult thing Jack had ever done, tearing away from the edge of that cliff. But he had no choice. It was too far to jump down. And even if he could do it safely, there was no guarantee that he could get them both back out. He ran back to camp, backtracking just enough to reach the edge of the rock field, hoping to avoid falling into the same crevice. He didn't care who had won the battle back in the gully, beast or humanoid. The thought of the victor looking for him never even entered his mind. All he could think of was getting back to camp and returning with a rope. He had to get to Will.
Lynn leapt from her berth, dashing to the bathroom. She barely got the toilet lid up before she vomited. It was a frightening experience, since she had never vomited before. She heaved several more times before she sat back up and closed the lid. She needed water to rinse the terrible taste from her mouth. She sat there for several minutes before she realized that someone else was in the bathroom on the other side. Struggling to fight back the nausea, Lynn rose to her feet and made her way out of the starboard bathroom over to the port side. She stood at the door, listening. She could barely hear the sound of someone breathing heavily from inside the stall. She carefully pushed the door open to find Adia in the same position she had been in only a moment ago. Jack had never run so fast, making it back to camp in fewer than 20 minutes. Working as quickly as possible, he tossed what he thought he needed into his backpack, including the rope and another ammo clip for his rifle. A few moments later, he was on his way back to the crevice, swinging his pack up over his shoulders as he ran. Jack noticed the sun was getting low in the sky. With only a few more hours of light left, he would have to work quickly if he wanted to rescue Will and somehow get him back to camp before dark. Jack was careful to follow his own path through the snow on his way back. It not only made for easier going, but also ensured that he didn't fall into another snow-covered hole. When he finally made it back to the crevice, he was exhausted and out of breath.
"Will!" he shouted between pants. "I'm back! I'm coming down to get you!"
Jack peered over the edge, half hoping to find his friend sitting at the bottom, waiting patiently for rescue. But there was only a white blanket of snow. There was something else as well, something he had not noticed earlier. Several dark patches of snow directly below. They were all along a 2-meter line. One small one, a larger one in the middle, and another small one, slightly off to the right. Jack slid his pack off his shoulders, dropping it in the snow to his right, as he reached inside and pulled out a rope. Looking around, it suddenly dawned on him.
What the hell am I going to tie this rope to?
Shit!
There was nothing nearby. No rocks, no trees. The nearest possible anchoring point was too far away.
I'll be right back,
Jack hollered, as he pulled a hatchet from his pack and ran toward the nearest tree. Jack leapt at the tree as he approached, grabbing onto the lowest branch and swinging himself up like a gymnast. With surprising grace, Jack ascended the tree until he reached what he thought to be a stout enough branch and began hacking away at its base. A few minutes later, the branch had been cut away, and Jack was dragging it across the snow, back to the crevice. He quickly draped the branch across the crevice and lashed his rope to it. After tossing his pack down into the abyss, Jack donned his climbing harness, twisted a descent ring through the line, clipped it to his harness, and jumped into the gully. The branch bowed at the sudden torque of Jack's body weight while the rope became taut. Jack applied just enough tension to the rope to slow him down to a safe speed. Still, he hit the bottom harder than he would have liked, his left ankle folding over as it plowed into the snow at the bottom of the gully and landed against an uneven, rocky surface. Jack never noticed the pain.
Will!
Jack scrambled over to his pack, reached into a side pocket, and pulled out a lantern. It was much darker down here than it had looked from above. As the lantern flickered to life, Jack saw inside the crevice clearly for the first time. It was about 40 meters deep, 4 meters in width at the bottom, and varied between 1 and 3 meters in width at the top. Above him, to the sides, he could see where the snow had frozen over to form a bridge across the crevice, hiding it from view of anyone on the surface. The late afternoon sunlight gave the frozen snow bridges an eerie, bluish glow. The fissure looked to be endless in either direction, but there was no way to tell without investigation. Jack looked toward the location where Will would have landed. The 3 dark patches of snow were dark red. He hurried toward the patches, dropping to his knees in the snow as he reached the first patch, and frantically started digging into the crimson-stained snow. Within seconds, he felt something. A boot. Will's boot.
Will!
He cried, as he frantically brushed the snow away from Will's boot and leg.
Oh, God!
Jack reached Will's knee. His pant leg was torn open, as was his knee, which was bloody and mangled. His kneecap was hanging off to the side, torn from its ligaments. Jack continued brushing away snow as he worked his way up Will's body. Thigh. Pelvis. Will was on his side, his right side. He was lying on an uneven surface draped over jagged rocks. Something Jack had dared not think about suddenly entered his mind. In less than a minute, Jack had cleared away the snow from most of Will's body.
Will!
He cried. Jack gently cradled Will's head and neck to protect his cervical spine. Carefully, he rolled Will onto his back.
Oh, God, Jack whispered. Oh, shit. Will,
he said in agony. There was a huge gash in Will's left side, from his mid-abdomen up to just below his right armpit. Bowel, lung tissue, and pieces of broken ribs hung from the gaping wound. The snow and rock where Will had struck the ground was saturated with blood that had coagulated and begun to freeze. Jack looked up at Will's face. His right eye was smashed back deep into its socket, the perimeter of which was crushed and bloody. There was no life in his good eye. No foggy breaths, his face already ashen and cold. Jack laid Will's head gently down onto the snow. He knelt there for ages, staring at the face of his dead friend, tears streaming down his cheeks.
"Why'd you have to go and fall in here, Will?"
he cried.
"Why?"
Suddenly, a small round shadow appeared over the bloody snow next to Will, a shadow from above. Jack spun around on his knees, nearly stumbling backward over Will's lifeless body, staring at the sight above him. Peering down over the edge of the crevice above was the face of the ape-like creature. The creature's long, bluish hair hung down in front of its face as it watched Jack. Its features were disheveled from the battle with the beast, its face and hands stained with a mixture of its own blood and that of its dead opponent. It made no sound, no gestures.
It only stared, a puzzled look on its face.
"What the hell are you looking at?"
Jack cursed at the top of his lungs. The creature gave no indication of a response.
"What do you want? A thank you?"
Jack yelled as he got back to his feet.
"Fine. Thank you very fucking much for coming to our rescue back there. Thank you very fucking much. But if you don't mind, I'd like to be left alone right now."
The ape grunted, then growled softly.
"Get lost!"
Jack yelled, his arms flapping wildly. Jack reached down and picked up his rifle, flipping off the safety as he swung around and raised his weapon. Four rounds left in the barrel of his rifle in flashes of light and fire, crashing into the ledge above, but the ape-like creature had seen them coming and ducked away. Rock and snow came tumbling down on top of Jack. He quickly realized what a dumb idea it had been. The ape-like creature stuck its head back over the edge, bellowing an angry discourse at Jack for his behavior.
"Fine. Do what you want,"
Jack resigned, as he plopped down onto the snow next to his dead friend.
"You want to come down here and eat me? That's fine."
Jack's gaze was fixed on Will's mangled face.
"You want to go home and lick your wounds? Well, that's fine, too."
All life rapidly drained from Jack's soul as he sat there, staring at Will. And just as suddenly as it had appeared, the ape-like creature was gone again.
"It's obvious that whatever is infecting us is airborne," Maria said at the wardroom table in the morning.
"Have you?"
Lynn looked at Maria.
"Yes,"
Maria responded to Lynn's inquiry.
"Since this morning."
Lynn suddenly felt her spirits drop even lower. Maria was their only hope, and now she was infected as well. Maria took Lynn's arm and pulled her around the corner, away from the others.
"Lynn, we have a tough decision to make."
Lynn looked at her blankly.
"I've made almost no progress in finding a way to fight this thing, let alone curing it, mainly because most of my time is spent caring for the crew."
"Adia and I are doing all we can to help," Lynn insisted.
"I know, but it's not enough. At the rate this thing is progressing, in a few days, I'm going to be too sick to do anything at all. I think we need to consider putting everyone into RMS.
"What?"
"Reduced metabolic stasis," Maria explained. "It was developed on the Daedalus about 30 years ago, during the ag crisis. They were hoping to use it to put half the ship's population into stasis to reduce the demand of ship consumables."
"Yeah, but they didn't use it. And if I remember correctly, it was because there were problems with it."
"Yes. Some of the rabbits they tested it on suffered brain damage when they were brought out of stasis."
"And you want to use that on us?"
Lynn said in horror.
"I thought they canceled the entire experiment."
"Not exactly. They just chose not to use it. But they did continue the experiments, just in case."
"And they made it safe?"
"Well, for the most part. But there are still some risks involved."
"And you have some of this stuff on board?"
"Yes, we brought some along, just in case," Maria replied.
"And you think it's the right thing to do?"
"I think it's our only chance, Lynn. However, because of the risks, it requires agreement between the medical officer and the mission commander. And that's you."
"What are the risks?"
"Neurological impairment, organ damage. Do you really want the list?"
"Oh, Jesus, Maria."
Lynn looked at her.
"It's better than death,"
Maria reminded her.
"Are you sure?"
Lynn sighed again.
"Isn't there something else we can try?"
she pleaded.
"If it's not transmitted from person to person, then it's got to be in the environment, right? Maybe we can button up the ship, reduce our exposure, make some improvements to the biofilters. There's got to be something else we can try first."
"We're already infected," Maria reminded her.
"At best, all those things might slow the progression, but sooner or later, unless we find a miracle, we will all die. RMS is our only hope."
"May I have some time to think about it?"
"No,"
Maria replied flatly.
"Honestly, some of us don't have much time left."
That night, Jack dined alone for the first time in his life. He had been born and raised aboard a starship, where the only privacy you had was on the toilet. He grew up with children who lived all around him on every deck. He ate in mess halls with his fellow colonists. He trained with his friends and crewmates. Privacy was completely foreign to him, just as it was to everyone else he had ever known. Yet here he was, stranded on this world, alone. He kept telling himself that he wasn't really alone. After all, he was trying to make it to the landing site, back to the rest of his crew, and he had to be close by now. Every single noise around him seemed louder and more intense than before. The crackle of the fire, the wind rustling through the trees, the occasional cry of a distant animal. Jack felt as if he could hear each snowflake as it landed, adding to the blanket of white around him. He scanned the area around his little camp. Luna Proxima was still high up in the night sky and provided little light. The glow from his fire provided faint illumination, reaching out to a 10-meter radius around him, before fading into the night. A few tree trunks were visible, and a few rocks were peeking out above the snow, his tent, Will's tent, and their gear. It suddenly felt as if there was nothing else but this little corner of the universe. It felt as if the blackness of outer space began just outside the edge of his dancing circle of amber firelight. But even worse, he felt like he was the only one left in existence. What if I can't find my way back to the others? Or worse yet, what if the others never made it? What if the Daedalus chose not to stop and colonize this world? What if something happened to the Daedalus? Jack struggled to keep his mind from jumping to conclusions. Too many thoughts, too much confusion. He was tired, and he had to sleep. "Tomorrow is a new day," he tried to tell himself. Rising, he tossed another piece of wood on the fire and climbed into his tent to sleep. The next morning, Jack packed up all of Will's equipment that he could carry, including his journal and his hand-carved flute. He would do everything possible to get them back to Will's son. It was the least he could do for his friend. Heavily draped in both his and Will's furs, Jack conducted his usual pre-departure scan, hoping to pick up a signal from the LRV that would lead him home. Every morning he did this, and each time it was the same. Nothing. Jack had decided that the only way to handle things was to carry on as if nothing had changed, but he knew he was fooling himself. Everything had changed. Still, he slung his pack and his rifle onto his back and continued his trek up the mountain. Maybe this time, maybe at the top of this next ridge, I'll pick up the LRV's signal.